This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 12 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. In today's episode, we have the return of Kate Kinsey. She has an opinion to the opinion piece from episode 7 on Subfrenzy. Kate has published some very good tips on our site. Here's our hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome everybody to the Even Dozen, episode 12 of the Kinky Cast. Hey, Beast, what do you know tonight?
I know I'm just finishing up a week of vacation and I'm in a great mood.
Fantastic.
And with us, we have part of the reason for my great mood. We have a topless Kate Kinsey in the studio with us. Kate, you remember Kate from a couple episodes back, episode 5, I believe it was. And Kate is a educator. She's educated with the National Leather Alliance Nashville chapter, local play space. She's give seminars for college students and all sorts of educational type events in her career. And she's back with us to discuss this topic of subfrenzy that Gabrielle brought up a few episodes back. Welcome, Kate.
Hi. Nice to be here. Good to see y'all.
Always welcome back in the very warm Studio A here at the complex.
It's a little toasty, but it's cozy, and we'll just have to lose clothes as the episode goes on.
There's no complaints here.
I know.
Woody, I think you planned this.
You know, I've got the furnace on right now.
Oh, and Kate brings...
And I just played right into it.
Brings plentiful bounties of heaving bosoms to this cause.
Isn't it a shame this isn't a video cast?
At this particular moment, yes, but we'll spare the viewers most of the time our ugly mugs. So, Kate.
Yes.
We had a conversation, and you were thinking after Gabrielle's cast on Subfrenzy, you had some thoughts that came forward. You had some questions that formed and some maybe responses, counterpoints to Gabrielle's experience. And the difference is she's got less than a year of experience and you have, what, 12, 13 years?
Yeah, almost 13 now. Well, you know, she brought up a lot of really good points, and I think it was excellent that the subject itself even comes up. But it did make me want to talk more about different aspects of it and wanted to be able to address some of the points that she brought up. It would have been great to have a conversation with her.
We will file that away. I think that she said the same thing when we were discussing your upcoming episode.
Yeah. There were several things in episode 7 she brought up. She wanted to know, number one, why is it called Subfrenzy? Why is the term usually reserved for female submissives? Why don't we talk about top or dom frenzy? And is the term subfrenzy in and of itself symptomatic of a sexist double standard? Those are some very good points to discuss. We always need to be careful about making assumptions about other people, about what they're looking for and what their capabilities are, and be careful about allowing sexist attitudes to creep into our kink, because we place so much emphasis on being accepting and tolerant. And communication.
You are stealing my line.
I know. I just wanted to throw that out for you.
Didn't she also talk about how inexperienced dom or top can be just as eager to play as subs and experience their own kind of frenzy?
Yeah, I think it's true that an inexperienced top may push on ahead with play even when they don't have the necessary experience with a particular toy, with reading that bottom's body language and their responses, or even with knowing their own limits and abilities. That's about inexperience, and that's a different issue. The term subfrenzy came about out of concern for what is, in my opinion, a very valid phenomenon specific to subs/bottoms. And I wanted to talk about it because I'm concerned that when we start dickering over semantics and terminology, we risk downplaying a very real danger that a high percentage of submissives experience at some point.
What exactly is sufferency in your opinion?
In my opinion, it's that first flush of overwhelming, consuming need and desire to experience it all and experience it now.
But we are in a immediate feedback society, aren't we?
Yes, we are. But you also have such golden nuggets of wisdom, such as all things come to those who wait. Good things come to those who wait. Most of us have thought about submission long before we ever get the nerve to go looking for it and explore this lifestyle. So when we do, we've got all this pent up interest and energy, and it's life changing when we actually begin to experience it. It's like somebody drops a bomb in your life. And it's all you can think about. It's just everything.
But this is a bomb of goodness and excitement, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But BDSM is really all you can talk about. And keep in mind, what we're talking about here is the phenomenon as it affects new submissives and mostly female heterosexual submissives. I would love to hear feedback from listeners out there in the gay and lesbian communities about what their experience regarding sub-frenzy is, as well as male het submissives. I don't presume to speak for any of those audiences simply because I don't know what their specific challenges are. Some people feel that sub-frenzy can afflict an experienced submissive at some point, particularly when they are coming out of a relationship. And again, it goes back to that having a lot of energy pent up and not being fulfilled for a long period of time.
So you're suggesting that this phenomena is not limited to only the new?
I think it's predominant among the new, but it's not only. I mean, it can happen to an experienced submissive that's been around for a while.
You were talking to me about Googling this and finding out how
yeah.
little data there was out there. This is a known phenomenon, but is this a researched phenomenon?
No, I mean, so much of what we have in this lifestyle, we don't have any hard and fast objective scientific data. We just have a lot of anecdotal experience, personal observation, those kinds of things. When I Googled sub-frenzy, a lot of what came up first in the searches was very generic and vague and did not give a real explanation of what they thought it encompassed or how to deal with it. And some of the stuff, you know, I would see questions from people and then was tempted to dash off this long answer to them because I wanted to help them, and I realized that the answer, it was posted in like 2005 and nobody had ever addressed the question. For all I know, that poor, you know, sub is out there still hanging around looking for an answer to what she's experiencing. I hope not. One of the reasons that sub-frenzy is different from just being enthusiastic, just being really interested in immersing yourself, is there's a particular group of factors involved that can be very intense, and they can result in a state of mind where that desire to play and to find a master causes a submissive's judgment and instinct for self-preservation to be impaired.
We were having a side conversation, and you proposed the concept might even be renamed yet again.
Yes, instead of sub-frenzy, gotta find a dom frenzy. Because for so many female submissives, that's really their focus. They feel like they've got to find Mr. Dom right to experience any of this.
Is that before their expiration date?
Yes, exactly.
So that is like the gotta find a husband. I hear reality TV calling.
Well, you know, we're such a relationship-oriented society, and in the kink community is no different. There's a lot of emphasis put on the couple. The yin and yang. How can you be a submissive if you don't have a dominant? Well, the truth is you can be a submissive without a specific dominant. You can be a slave without a master. You are experiencing things, you are looking for things, you are learning, you are making contacts and networks and friends and support groups. You can participate without having the end-all, be-all relationship that you're hoping for.
We use these terms, slaves and submissives, and they describe also personality traits as well as relationship orientations. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And you can be really enthusiastic about cooking, for example, but the chances of physical injury from too much baking is pretty slim.
I will beg to defer.
Has it sent you to the ER lately?
Well, it could.
It could, and it does send me frequently to buy the next larger size.
So that's something we all have to deal with. Submission, though, you know, you're playing around with some very powerful magic, both physically and emotionally.
What do you consider the signs of frenzy to be? We have talked about it, but what are some of the warning signs, some of the red flags should be going off, bells, whistles?
Basically, it's when you're going too fast and you're taking risks. You're doing things that a year from now you're going to look back on and ask yourself, what the fuck was I thinking?
You speak on this from experience.
Oh, yeah, personal experience.
Having been through this this phase.
I've been through the phase. I've experienced it myself. I've seen friends go through it. I've heard the horror stories. I've counseled other subs on discussion groups and online.
That's right. You were moderator of a FET group for newbies, I believe, at one point,
yeah,
weren't you?
Yeah.
And this was something that came up over and over, is too fast and too much.
Yeah, and also some groups on Yahoo and AOL back in the old days before we had FET.
You're dating yourself now.
Yes,
dear.
I know. The signs of frenzy. You're playing too fast, too soon with somebody that you don't really know. You may have talked to them a few times online, and all of a sudden you're willing to meet them. You're playing too often with multiple partners. And the problem with that is because you really need to give yourself time between plays to process mentally, emotionally, and to physically heal from plays before you go dashing into another one, especially at the beginning when you don't know what your personal body tolerances are.
And we have all heard about drop afterwards.
Exactly.
And sometimes it happens not that hour, not that day, the next day, even days into the week. And when you're new and you're playing hard and fast with a lot of people, you will not be able to identify the end of one and the beginning of the next.
Exactly.
And it makes it harder for the tops you are playing with to know, is this a situation that I was involved in that caused this reaction, or was it somebody else?
Was it something that was already there, you know?
It reminds me of the tech support situation where nobody wants to or can take responsibility for the problem because it's become so complex a situation.
There's also engaging in types of play that you haven't really educated yourself about.
Education?
Education.
What's that?
Education is second only to communication.
You're stealing my lines.
Yeah, I'm setting you up. I'm feeding you. Again, there's so many types of play out there when you're new. I remember somebody, Adam, sent me a negotiation checklist. And it was just this huge several-page list of different activities. And I looked down at some of them and I'm like, I didn't even have any idea what they were talking about. I'm like,
gee, bastinado, what is that?
Yeah, and I remember one of them was dilation and abrasion, and then I looked down and I saw fisting, and I thought, oh my God, I don't even know if I want to know what that is.
But that list does serve a useful purpose.
It does.
It should spark you to go and start researching and learning.
Exactly. But the thing is, you know, when you're new, a lot of times some new dom will come on and say, I'd really like to experiment with, you know, sounds on you. And you're thinking, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. And then you find out.
I'll put my headphones on. Okay.
Yes. And then you find out that it's not exactly what you had in mind.
Experiment. That should have been a red flag word right there.
And another sign is that you agree to just about everything with anybody. You don't ask enough questions, if any, and you don't make any demands of your own because you really haven't got enough confidence to know to say, okay, I'm okay with you hitting me here, but I really don't want you to hit me there. It takes some time to learn these things.
What, a submissive that has demands?
Exactly. I know it's strange to hear, but that's a big learning step for a submissive, is to figure out that being submissive does not mean you're a doormat. It does not mean that you say yes to everything and everybody. It doesn't mean that you don't have any rights. One of the biggest red flags and one of the biggest dangers is that you will go and meet strangers in private, often without telling anybody where you're going or who you're going to be with.
While we're here, let's extol the virtues of the safe call again. What's a safe call, Kate?
Safe call is setting up with a friend to say, I'm going here, I'm meeting this person, and if I don't call you back by 9 o'clock, call the police or come looking for me, or It depends on how you set it up. It can vary. Safe calls are great in theory, and it's better than nothing, but in truth, a safe call is not going to do you any good if you're already dead in a ditch somewhere.
If we go back in episode 8, Lee talked about going to a first meeting with a master who said, bring a safety person with you. And that first meeting was, they both had safety people, the top and the bottom, which is always interesting to know so that your safety person can get to know that person just a little bit.
That's a great idea, and it was very impressive to hear her talk that somebody actually putting that much emphasis on safety, that they were willing to say that that was the way they did things, because I'd never heard anybody do that before.
But this requires a much greater measure of patience than what we've been describing in the typical sub-frenzy or gotta-find-a-dom frenzy phenomena.
Well, you want to know how stupid I was when I started? Here's one of the good signs that I was in sub-frenzy. The first week I was into it, I played with a local dom 2 days in a row, and then I got in my car on Saturday and drove to Alabama out of state to meet someone that I had never met, to play with him in a hotel room, and I didn't tell anybody where I was going.
In a ditch on the side of the road.
Yeah. I was very lucky, and I've been very upfront with a lot of subs that I've counseled. I said, you know, I tell you all these things, but I know that I did so many things wrong when I started, and I know that I am very, very lucky that some terrible things did not happen to me.
I'll back up. I don't like the word wrong, but you did so many things that could have had very poor outcomes.
Okay.
I'd say calculated risk, but the word calculated was probably left off this one.
Yeah, I doubt there was calculations in your planning, was there?
No.
Okay.
You're listening to three people here that have 50 years of experience in the scene. Isn't that scary?
Yeah, that is scary.
The thing is, we have all done exactly what we're saying not to do right now.
I know. If you're one of these new people who is sick and tired of us old farts telling you, you know, you think we're telling you what to do, just remember, we're only telling you this not because we're smarter than you, but because we've already done the dumb things. We're experts at dumbness.
You have coined yet another phrase that I have heard you use. We got sub-frenzy. We gotta find a dom frenzy. But for those submissives that are not necessarily looking for a relationship, you kind of threw out another phrase here that kind of is colorful explanation.
Candy store syndrome. Being a kid in a candy store. That's not my invention. I mean, I've heard it before, and I actually like it better, I think, than sub-frenzy, because it really is very much that we are kids in a candy store when we first start. We're surrounded by all these things that we wanted forever, and now we're in the store, and we've got money in our pocket, and we're looking around, and we want to taste everything. We want it now, and we don't care if we're going to rot our teeth or get a stomach ache, or end up in a sugar coma, or diabetic. We just want it.
That does remind me of a story, one of my submissives back from the past. She used to go to public play spaces and try to arrange as many play dates as she could simultaneously.
Wow.
She would have three guys flogging her simultaneously. This was another version of frenzy. She was completely into the fact that if she could get more people concentrating and paying attention to her at the same time, it was a better thing.
If she's experienced enough to understand all of the shortcomings and is prepared to handle the possible negative outcomes, I see no problem with it.
I agree with you. If it all hinges on experience and knowing your own self and your own tolerances and who you're playing with.
Oh, but wait a minute. We said, what was the key word? We said if.
If you are experienced.
If you're experienced. And what are we talking
about?
We're
talking about people who are not yet experienced.
Why do you believe this frenzy applies mostly to submissives?
Well, it's a combination of things. Number one, because the sub has the opportunity and a top does not. When you talk to subs that have just come out, and again, I experienced it and my friends have experienced it. As soon as you put your first profile out there on whether it's Fet or Yahoo or alt.com, the minute you put out that you were a new submissive and you were looking for something, you were going to be flooded.
Also known as fresh meat.
Fresh meat, exactly. You get everything from respectful inquiries and offers of friendship to, I had one guy that IM'd me on AOL at work to tell me he expected me in the parking lot on his lunch hour to give him a blowjob to prove that I was submissive.
Did you go?
No, not that time.
But there was another one?
See, yeah, I set that up. I knew you'd say that because you know me too well. New tops just don't have that opportunity to go hog wild, whereas a new sub does. A lot of new subs, if you schedule it right, you can play once or twice every single day until everybody's basically, and this sounds terrible, everybody's had their chance at you. Because there are doms who, with varying degrees of motivations that could be good, could be bad, are really attracted to fresh meat. And they want to get a crack at you before you're snuffed up by somebody else.
And it is fresh meat, and then once it's not fresh anymore, they're gone.
I have seen that happen more than once. Is somebody comes in, and the interesting thing would be to track it and do the research. Are they leaving because of the experiences that they had suddenly, or have they satisfied their wants? What is exactly the reason that we do have people come and go so quickly?
And well, let me chime in here from the no longer a new sub fresh meat to slightly at my expiration date, maybe been around the block, experienced sub. I don't get those kind of offers deluging me anymore. I still would like to play, but I don't get a new offer in my mailbox every day. A few, yes, but I think a lot of these dominants out there, they look around and they're looking at these profiles and they see that I've been in the lifestyle for a while and I'm not the kind of experience they want. They want somebody they can teach, somebody that they don't have to worry knows more than them, somebody that's not going to question them. And, you know, there is a lot to be said for an experienced person really can recapture some of that initial flush of excitement and exploration by playing with a new person. You see that kink through new eyes. I don't begrudge anybody that. But, you know, some of us old dogs out here, we'd still like to play if you could, you know, throw us a bone once in a while.
So the old dog can still hunt.
She still wants to, you know, roll around in the grass.
Now, is part of this these solicitations, for to use a tawdry word, are they coming from new people or are they coming from the experienced? Or,
you know, I think it's really hard to tell, and I've pondered this myself. Why is it that female submissives are overwhelmed often by male doms looking for play with them? Is it because men are just naturally, let's see, find a nice word, just naturally horny horn dogs that are, and as the beast raises his hand,
guilty as charged.
Guilty as charged. Or is it because that they are dominant, meaning that they are far more comfortable with going out and asking somebody for what they want, whereas a submissive more naturally will hang back and wait for somebody to approach them? I don't know. I don't believe that in it. Again, I don't know if the dynamic between female dominance and male subs, how different they are, because I don't think female dominants are that aggressive. But is it because they don't need to be, that there are so few good female dominants that the male submissives are begging for their attention?
The male submissives are standing in line to get a good dome.
That's the only thing I've heard. And I know a lot of times, again, when I first started and I first put my profile out there, I was amazed. It says clearly, I'm submissive. I want to be a slave. This is what I'm interested in. And I'd still have submissive men sending me email wanting to serve me. And I'd say, I can't give you what you want. Why are you coming to me? They're so desperate sometimes that they're looking for anybody.
Well, I think the heterosexual or heteroflexible male is the possibly our invisible community out there, that they are present, but they aren't very visible.
And I don't know why that is, but like I said, I figured out very early on there were a lot of male submissives out there who wanted things. Because I did toy with switching for a while, and
so given this, is it possible that the male submissive could be frenzied and willing to throw caution to the wind?
I think he is, but again, he doesn't have the opportunity that a female sub does.
There's another side to that. A lot of men do not want to be seen as submissive to the public eye.
Well, this comes to mind. I remember a recent Fed conversation where a new submissive male was complaining that he had just come to a realization with the woman he had tied himself to, that she wanted him for his money and nothing else. And that was a harsh reality for him. And possibly instead of falling prey to physical hurt, these males are falling prey to other injuries?
Oh, but we can expand that to every sub. I often tell new subs that while you are counseled a lot to protect your body from physical harm, you also have to protect your heart from emotional harm, because it is just so natural for a submissive, when they finally get the play and the attention and that dynamic power exchange that they want, it's a hugely cathartic, life-changing experience. Of course they fall in love with the dominant. They don't intend to. I know I didn't intend to. In fact, I had some conversations with my first dominant, my first master, about how it was better not to be in love with your dominant, because that would only complicate the type of dynamic that you wanted. So yeah, I feel bad for a male sub who feels he's been, but you run that risk in anything, I think.
Well, financial domination is an actual situation out there. That
yeah, I've heard. I know it's out there, but I've never understood why anybody would want to do that. But
it happens mostly in the older set.
Well, because money becomes something they can give, even if their sexuality is ebbing, the money could still be shared, and it's a source of humiliation yet again, which many of them find is something that they desire, for whatever psychological reasons.
But getting back to...
Point one was because a sub has opportunity, a top does not.
Right.
Now, are there other points on that?
Two would be because a sub tends to experience more profound altered states. Submissives get that euphoric high of endorphins released in play. If you don't know what endorphins are, it's a group of morphine-like hormones secreted by the brain when the body is under unusual stress. And these hormones fit into the brain's receptors and simulate them to fire, producing tranquilizing and pain-killing properties that induce a sort of euphoria. Some people report feeling a state of well-being similar to endorphin euphoria after you experience the intense sensations such as those associated with prolonged flogging. Runners talk about the runner's high. It's the same thing.
Well, I believe that in just a recent episode, Dr. Brad Sagrin was measuring this.
He was measuring the hormone level.
The hormone levels, and he was working with cortisol, and he discovered that the subs are experiencing pronounced changes in the cortisol level, and yet the tops are not experiencing as much of a dramatic or shift in those levels during play.
The sub is receiving the physical stimuli that the body responds to. The dom is dishing out. The dom is going to react to physical exertion. The dom is going to react to mental enjoyment they get from being in control of the situation. But they're not going to experience that endorphin rush because they're not experiencing pain or intense sensation. The endorphins themselves can be addictive and judgment impairing. One of the things that even a seasoned submissive has to watch out for is that you can go so far in play and be so deeply in a euphoric, endorphin-fueled state that you don't realize real injury is being done to you. And that's where knowing your limits and having a top that knows you well is absolutely imperative.
And this comes from, what's that E word again?
Experience.
Experience. Okay. What's our third point?
Then you have to take into account a sub's nature. I don't want to say anything that subs are passive victims, but subs want to let somebody else take control. They want to please. And while this is part of what makes the sub so much fun for you tops and dominants, it also makes it very easy for them to feel like it's not their place to ask questions or to say, I want this, I don't want this.
Are you saying that submissives are natural victims?
No. But the nature of their desires make it more likely that they can be manipulated more so than a top. Been in situations where sometimes I think tops and doms are just contrary by nature because they want to prove that, gosh darn it, they're in control of the situation. And if you say black, they're going to say white. Whereas if you say black, the submissive is going to go, yes, sir, black.
What's the first rule?
Communication, communication, communication.
Master's always right.
Oh, well, I forgot that one. That's not a rule. That's a law.
True. It's a law of nature, right? Master is always right.
And this is where I get to disagree with the beast. Of course, the master is always right. But if you want to be safe, you'd better start questioning that authority.
Yes.
And Woody, you're totally right.
Yes, the beast will often make jokes here that we know him. We know that he knows that is not always true.
I have an image to keep up.
I know, but I have to, you know, make sure that people know that you are not advocating Master's always right, even when he's an asshole.
Definitely not. If the master that always believes he's right is misusing his resources, I believe in surrounding myself with knowledgeable, capable, submissive partners. And if I ignore their input over and over, I am blinding myself to what's going on around me, most likely.
Well, you know, you and I are really in tune on this subject simply because we play together and we both know that there's a lot about weaving the paradox, the illusion that you need, the headspace, the mental game, that is oftentimes at odds with what is actually going on. Meaning that we've played so much with humiliation play where I may ask for a timeout begging mercy, and you say, oh, you're going to pay for this. And I know that you're actually not going to punish me for saying a safe word or for asking you to do something, but it's the part of the game between us. We keep that mindset going by playing our parts.
And you hit upon the word early, illusion.
Illusion.
And earlier you crafted the word magic.
Yes.
These are things we play with, but when we are careful never to totally leave reality behind.
Yeah, when we're talking education, we really have to be careful to not forget that we're talking, and there are people out there who don't know us, who don't understand sometimes when we're just kidding around. We're not actually telling you that Master's always right.
So let's back up. You are saying the subs are not naturally victims.
Most new submissives and even the more experienced ones are still trying to get their heads around the idea that being submissive does not mean they are submissive to just everybody. And there's so many, you know, that's one of those questions I always get asked when you're new and you go to the club. Can just anybody touch me? Do I have to do what everybody tells me? The answer is no. But it's another reason why kinksters really need to address the issue of sub-frenzy. Sometimes you really have to protect people who are new from falling into certain pitfalls. Because there are people out there who want to tell that new submissive, yes, if you're submissive, you're going to do what I tell you to do, even though you don't know me from Adam's house cat.
And if you believe that, you're very wrong.
Exactly.
But I will throw the counter out. That we must be careful not to overly bubble wrap the new submissive, that they're there to experience. And if we over bubble wrap them, we run the risk of sending them underground to experience.
That's true.
What they're seeking.
And I also, this is also another thing that I really believe in, that if you, as a submissive, are not strong enough, if you aren't strong enough to stand up for yourself, if you aren't strong enough to tell somebody no when you really mean no, you don't have any business playing around with BDSM because you're just a train wreck looking for a place to happen.
I always tell the new people that we preach the safe words, and most of the community uses the standard red, yellow, green system, to not be afraid to use the word red outside of the traditional play spaces when you're feeling that your boundaries are being encroached upon. Too great. The word red just has such a impact when somebody hears it that he'll often cause somebody to back up and rethink what is happening in the situation.
As you point out, we don't want to bubble wrap new submissives so much, and I certainly, and I'm not giving anybody a get out of jail free card, because it's another potentially damaging double standard that so many subs feel that they can just skip from play to play and leave all the responsibility for safety and education to the top. And that's just not true, and it's not fair, and it doesn't help anybody have a good time. The good thing about talking about sub-frenzy is when both the dom and the sub are aware that the phenomenon is out there, that it happens, it encourages both of them to communicate as honestly as possible and make better decisions. We call it sub-frenzy again. Another reason we call it sub-frenzy is because the bottom is the one at a more pronounced physical risk, not the top. The bottom is the one being tied up, hit, beaten, dangled, hogtied, blindfolded, shocked, fisted, otherwise rendered helpless on the receiving end of possible physical damage.
Did I hear you purr during some of those?
Yeah, it's hard not to get excited when I talk about all those wonderful things. I've been there in some frenzy, and I look back at some of the things I did and think, you know, who the hell was that crazy bitch that took over my body? I had a lot of fun, but I was very lucky.
But I will go back. We can't, while the bottom is at physical risk, the top at all points is at a risk of morning after regrets that can end up in sticky.
That's true,
public,
and I see your point.
Public relations and even legal situations. So the tops really need to be cautious when they're proceeding, particularly with new people.
Until you understand that you have a known quantity, I would proceed with caution from a top point of view.
You could have a person that get in way over their head and have morning after regrets, and you just have a situation spiraling well out of control for everybody. And it doesn't end well.
Everybody needs to be aware that the phenomenon is out there, that it happens. And if you need further proof that it does actually happen, it doesn't happen to every sub. I still run into women who insist, oh, no, I never experienced this. But more often they say, yeah, oh, my God, you know, and when they start to tell you their BDSM nightmare stories, 9 times out of 10, it begins with, you know, back when I first started in BDSM, dot, dot, dot. It's usually those times back when they didn't know enough to avoid that situation that they got in a situation that could have gone bad.
All right. Do you have some quick tips for people how to deal with sub-frenzy?
Yeah. Number one, knowledge is always a good thing. Take the time to educate yourself. Just knowing that other people have been through this, that there's a name for what you're going through, can be enormously helpful. You're not losing your mind. Other people have been there. You will get through it. But gathering as much knowledge on BDSM in general is a good idea across the board. The more you know about safety, about terminology, the more you know the right questions to ask potential partners, the more you can kind of slow yourself down and take it at a pace that's safe. 2, you want a support system. You want to talk to other subs, either real time or online. Discussion groups are great. Munches are great. Again, big piece of advice, find friends first, play partners second, because friends will help you find the right play partners, and they will help you avoid bad situations. 3, find a friend or a service top who can take the edge off with safe play. If you can find someone that you don't want a sexual relationship with, and they don't want a sexual relationship with you, but they're a skilled top, and they can help you get some of the experiences that you want. They can help you learn your tolerances in a safe environment. Going to local play parties where there are, at the local dungeon where there are dungeon monitors, keeping an eye on your safety. Those are very good ways to gain some of that experience that you so desperately want, but in a safe way. 4, exercise. For you endorphin junkies, exercise. It's hard for me to believe this, but I know it's true. I hate exercise, but you can get an endorphin rush. You can get some of that positive feedback physically from exercise. 5, keep a journal. Writing about what you're experiencing can help you process all this information. It will help you, again, slow down and breathe. The most important thing, I think, that was helpful for me, take a sheet of notebook paper, get a magic marker, and in great big letters write, slow the fuck down. And tape that to your bathroom mirror, if you can.
Or write it backwards and stick it on your forehead.
Yes, exactly.
I like that idea.
Because that was what the Dom in Alabama told me. He recognized, even though he was luring me to Alabama to a hotel room with a stranger, he was the first one to say, you know, here's one piece of advice. Take a breath and calm the fuck down, because you are out of control.
Many of these tops that are soliciting these fresh meat, they are not out for harm or ill intent. They're just, like myself, horny men.
Well, you know, it can be a lot of fun to play with fresh meat. Like I said, it helps you reinvigorate all the things that you experienced the first time. And they can be a lot of fun and a great help for the new submissive, because they've got experience. They're willing to share it. They're often very skilled. It's just everybody has to be upfront about what they're looking for and what they hope to gain from it.
There's also loads of NRE, new relationship energy, right?
Oh,
there.
Yeah. Well, then we get, no, that's going to take us all down another road towards poly and power exchange. And
which is coming up on a future show.
So new subs need to watch out for sub frenzy.
Yes.
What other advice do you have for them? Since you moderate some groups for beginner submissives, you have led education programs. What's some of the other?
Okay, number one, and it kind of goes back to what I said about dealing with sub frenzy. Read, read, study, ask questions, read some more. The best and fastest, easiest first read, in my personal opinion, is SM101 by Jay Wiseman. It's very accessible, it's fast, and it gets a lot of knowledge in fast. I also really enjoyed Screw the Roses.
On our Hot Links page, SM101, Jay Wiseman.
And I believe it's now in ebook form.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there. I would say, okay, try not to rely too much on what you read on a website. It's weird, but the people who have taken time to actually write and publish a book generally tend to know more than what they're talking about than the guy who sits down at the computer and starts typing up 101 rules for my sub.
They may be perfectly good rules for his submissive, but are they good general rules?
Well, there's a lot of information out there on the web that's just bad. Number two, remind yourself not to be so eager to play or find a dom that you accept the first one that comes along. Three, be aware of anyone who says these things. I want to collar you now. I don't want you talking to other dominants. If you were a true submissive, you'd do what I want. You must have no limits to be my slave. You don't need a safe word with me. I don't allow them. Those are absolutely red flags. Run, run, run. Anybody who insists on a private first meeting in a hotel room, in his home or your home, no, don't do it. Anybody who expects or insists on playing on the first meeting, don't do it. Anybody who expects or insists on play, including sex, if you don't want to. If you want to have sex, that's great. I'm all for it. I cheer you on. Because God knows when I first started, I wanted sex too. In fact, if I remember correctly, the dom that I first played with, I really wanted sex, and he sent me home. Can you imagine that?
I can't imagine him doing that.
But he did. He did. And I was so crushed.
But you came back wanting more?
Oh, yes, yes. But remind yourself, number four, not to be so eager to play or find a dob that you accept the first one that comes along. Did I say that before? Yes, I did, but there's a reason, because that is a very important rule. Number five, find the local group in your area. Go to their munch. Get your courage on, man up, girl up, pony up, whatever. These are not scary people. You're going to be amazed to find they're just like you. Go to the munch. If they have an online discussion group, join it. That's a great way to get your feet wet and to get a sense of who's out there. If classes or demos are offered in your area, try to attend those. Again, these are ways of getting out there and learning. Make friends first in that local group before you think of finding a dom. And if you can find, if you're a female sub, if you can find an experienced female submissive to help you navigate, that's really great. If you can't find one real time in your area, find one online. Because you need at least one person you can bounce thoughts and questions off of. The local group also will often have play parties with dungeon monitors. They can give you references. They can tell you about the people that are approaching you. But also, another good side benefit of that is it lets those who might be tempted to take advantage of you know that there are other people looking out for you, that you are not an isolated player that they can take advantage of easily, that there will be people watching.
There are tops that will stalk isolated players.
Exactly, because they're ripe for all kinds of terrible things. Learn the basics of safety. A lot of submissives, when they start, they think, I don't need to learn how to tie a knot. I don't need to learn how to cane someone. The thing is, you do, because if you don't know the right way to do it, you're not going to know to speak up to somebody when they're doing something that seems really wrong. You want to run very quickly and strongly from anybody who says something like, I have plenty of experience. Who the hell are you to tell me I shouldn't wrap this rope around your throat and leave you bound and alone for hours?
Yeah, right.
Exactly. But, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, you could swallow that idea that they know what they're doing and I don't.
Check his references.
Well, that's great if you can get them to give you references.
If he won't, run.
Well, that's true. Number eight, remind yourself not to be so eager to play or find a dom that you accept the first one that comes along. Did I say that for the third time? Yes, I did, because it's important. Number 9, learn to say no. I can't stress this enough. It's your right and obligation to yourself and to whoever you eventually decide to submit and give yourself to. It's your right and obligation to protect yourself from harm, both mental and physical. If you cannot say no, your yes has absolutely no value. No respectable dominant wants a doormat. Doormats are no fun. You can buy them at Walmart. They're a dime a dozen, almost. 10, I personally advise playing the field a bit before committing to one person because you want more experience to find out what you really want and need. There are so many different relationship dynamics, and until you experience some of them, you really don't know whether, well, would I be, am I a slave? Am I looking for a daddy? Am I service-oriented? Am I purely looking for submission in the bedroom? There are so many different ways that this lifestyle can play out. You are allowed to play casually with people. You don't have to have their collar or a serious commitment.
Doesn't that run counter to many of our cultural norms about these personal spaces and being intimate and physical?
Well, you know, I think that varies a lot according to what generation you are, because more and more, say what we will about younger players not having the experience, they also don't have a lot of the baggage that we do because society's just loosened up. They're more, a little bit more fluid with gender. They're a little more fluid with roles, and they're a lot more comfortable with experimentation than a lot of us were at that age.
So you're talking about the millennials.
Exactly.
And I presume that the flower children would also have a similar outlook on life. It's that middle generation in between the millennials and the flower children.
If you finally decided that this is something you want to do, you want to explore your sexuality, you want to find out what works for you instead of what everybody has told you should work, don't cling to traditional commitment-centered monogamy. Why cling to that if you haven't tried the option to find out?
My mother used to say, play the field.
Play the field, but also I'm saying, you know, for the sake of self-fulfillment, we started asking a lot of questions. We questioned the standard traditional things that have been plopped down in front of us and said, this is the way you live your life. If you've questioned one thing,
why not question others?
Why not question the others? Because you want to find what works for you. Again, new subs, understand that you're going to attract a lot of different attention, but there will be people who will try. They'll want to mentor you. They'll want to train you. They want to stake a claim on you very fast. It's not always bad, but you just don't want somebody pushing you into something you're not ready for.
Where's that branding iron?
Exactly. Amazingly, there are a lot of people out there who are going to contact you that aren't really dominants. They're just men who want blowjobs. They think being dominant means they can get a blowjob on their lunch hour. And here's my own personal opinion. People will take issue with this. A mentor who wants to have sex with you is not a mentor. They're a sex partner who just wants to call themselves a mentor. Number 11 rule or advice, don't enter into a poly relationship as a secondary sub or as a primary sub if you don't think that you want to live that way. It doesn't matter how wonderful someone is, how perfect you think they are, he's not going to leave his primary for you. And if he does, then you have to wonder how quickly he's going to drop you for the next bit of fresh meat that comes along. You're not going to change somebody. You're not going to take a top and make him a sub. You're not going to take a poly person and make them monogamous. The last piece of advice I'll give you is really do some research. FetLife is a great thing that's come about. There's so much information out there. Unfortunately, as we were discussing it at dinner tonight, it's not searchable with like Google or search engines. You have to go to individual groups and search their archives to find out that somebody's already asked the question that may be pressing on your mind at the given moment. But there's a lot of information that's already out there. Go slow. Enjoy yourself. It's a journey, not a destination. So, you know, I hope I've given new submissives some ideas of how to begin their exploration. I certainly don't want to scare anybody back into the closet, because this can be the greatest adventure of your life. It certainly was of mine. I wouldn't trade it for anything, even with the mistakes I made. But hopefully, maybe you can avoid some of the stupider things I've done and things that other people have done.
Or at least when you make those same stupid mistakes, realize how to recover from them quicker and gracefully.
Very good point. No, it's not the end of the world. You're not a terrible person.
And realize you're not the first person to be here.
Exactly.
Kate, thank you for coming.
Well, thanks for having me.
Before we let her go, let's invite her to listen to the question that a caller has sent in to us.
Sure.
Thanks, guys. We have a question from the Bashful Box. Dear Kinky Abby, I'm trying to figure out what cuckolding really is. I have looked it up, and it seems to be some kind of humiliation in front of my husband. I don't want to humiliate him, and he just thinks it would be hot for another guy to fuck me. What are the real motivations behind it? I am curious and want to learn more to give both of us what we want. I think it sounds hot. Signed, Steamy.
Well, Kate, I'll let you have weigh in first.
Oh, don't throw this to
ladies, me. Ladies first.
You know, I don't really have a lot of knowledge about cuckolding. I know it's out there. I know it's very popular.
I will say, I picked up on a key word. I think that the listener is actually interested in a lesser known fantasy that looks a lot like cuckolding, but isn't. It's called the hot wife fantasy. And in the hot wife fantasy, the male is so proud and excited by his female partner that he wants to watch her with other men with the knowledge that he's taking her home. There's no hint of embarrassment or humiliation in this fantasy. It is strictly that he wants to share this wonderful bounty that he feels he has with other men. It's the hot wife fantasy.
Or actually, he's kind of like rubbing people's noses and, hey, look what I got. You can have her for a little while, but I'm in control. And I say when you have to let go of her and I take her home.
Yes, that is exactly right. Whereas a cuckolding fantasy, named after the bird of the fame that lays its eggs in other nests and forces the other birds to raise their young, the cuckolding is where the partner feels that he is unable to be the man that his partner deserves and shares her with what he envisions is a superior male.
And that's all about humiliation play, then.
That's all about humiliation, and it's often if it's healthy, it's done in a fantasy context and with plenty of loving support from the wife after the event and during the lead-up to the event.
Do you think cuckolding has any aspect of not so much humiliation, but of submissiveness? One of the great things about submitting is that I'm letting go of control. I'm letting somebody else control the situation. I'm getting enjoyment, but I just have to lay back and go with it. I don't have to put out any energy. So in a cuckold's case, he's enjoying his wife's being satisfied. He's enjoying the sexually charged energy going back and forth, but he's not necessarily on the line for performing.
And there's often the forced bisexuality or the cleanup aspect in the cuckold relationship. Where, again, he is getting something that he isn't exactly prepared, but he can put it in this context. He wants it, and he's putting the context.
By clean up, you mean cream pies and those.
I mean cream pies and
such. Okay, well, let's, you know, we're an adult thing here. Let's be honest, say what we mean.
No beating around the bush.
No beating around the bush.
Nobody should have to guess what you mean. You're not sending him out with a mop.
Now, the cuckold situation also, as often as not, occurs when the wife goes out on her own on a planned date with her partner. In the hot wife scenario, it's almost always that the male partner is present for the interaction. He's actually there to witness and watch the play occur. In the cuckold, he is waiting, as often as not, at home for his satiated wife to come home and fall into bed completely satisfied, and he's just a spectator to the aftermath.
I've seen the cuckolding go both ways on that, both present and not present, and so it's really hard to say. And I also see this as less of a BDSM type of move than more, it's actually more in line with the swinger community.
Well, I believe in the cuckolding, there's definitely a DS element often, domination submission, a power exchange, but it doesn't fit many of the other BDSM.
Because basically it sounds
situations.
Like they're talking about sex, having sex, not that somebody's going to come beat her.
Correct.
Well, yeah, there's no beating in here. It's just about sex.
Yes. Darn.
But I do believe, Bashful, that you're talking about the hot wife fantasy. It's perfectly acceptable, perfectly normal. Any human sexual activity is normal if all adult parties agree to it. Enjoy it if you choose that this is something you want to experience other men. Don't be afraid to embrace it. Take it slow. test the waters to make sure that you can handle the emotions that come up with this type of play.
Yeah, that was something I was going to suggest.
Allow yourself room for decompression after your first event and be cautious if you choose to include the same partners on repeated encounters, that this could add an extra emotional layer that you didn't intend to add. There's a lot of hot wives. Each new partner gets one shot at the wife, and safety there is there's no repeats, so there's less fear of replacement.
And on that note, I think we're going to bring this one to a close. Kate, thank you for joining us tonight and sharing your viewpoints on
my pleasure. Thank you, Woody.
Subfrenzy, and also a lot of new good information, which we will publish on our page. So if you want to see Kate's viewpoint in print, please click on the link.
And you can also, at www.katekinsey.com, you can find my website, which has got information on my books. It's also got some of my essays written about different lifestyle subjects that you can find there.
And she's also on our Hotlinks page. So, Beast, we're bringing this one to a close.
Thank you, Woody. Enjoy your spring. The weather's getting good.
You have been listening to episode 12 of the Kinky Cast. Today we heard Kate Kinsey share her opinion on subfrenzy and getting into the lifestyle. We want to hear from you with your comments or questions. So email us, questions@kinkycast.com, or call and leave a voicemail at 916-KINKY69. If you leave a contact number, we will try to reach you to join us on the show. Some listeners want to remain completely anonymous, so we have the Bashful tab on our webpage. Just type your message and hit send. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and Cassie, I'm Max. See you next week, when Shiva's vessel returns. Bye for now.